Welcome to the December 5th, 2009 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you over the air by WFT 90.1 FM radio in Champaign, Illinois, and webcast worldwide at WFT.org. The views and opinions that are expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the WEF's Board of Directors, Station Manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. Now here's Tom with acknowledgments of some of our underwriters.
The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the Illinois Education Association Teachers Union and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice. Building coalitions amongst workers, unions, and the community, the Illinois Education Association and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice are proud to support WEFT Community Radio in East Central Illinois. This hour of programming is also brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of Maintenance Way. The Brotherhood of Maintenance Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A democratic union, BMWE, celebrates the voice for labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that they enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. The Illinois World Labor Hour is also supported in part by listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. And I'm your host, David Johnson, here with co-host Tom Thomas, who have some workers' interest news for us. And later in the hour, the Labor Hour Cultural Corner. Tom's brand new poem for this week is entitled, Where is Karma? Also here with us today is co-host Bob Pelesny, our technical expert and advisor, who has some news and banner for us, and also a special returning guest, Marty Conless from LaborBeat Video in Chicago. And Marty's going to be on a panel discussion over at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana later today. This is commemorating the 10th anniversary of the WTO Battle of Seattle, and we'll have, of course, more of that and conversation with Marty here later in the show.
A group of Senate Democrats said last week that the Census Bureau should look to the long-term unemployed when it staffs employees for the 2010 census. Said Senator Chuck Schumer, a Democrat from New York, the census is providing a once-in-a-decade opportunity to put a good number of Americans back to work. The Census Bureau responded that in these difficult times, we've made it a priority to hire reliable people who need jobs. It said the agency has worked with the Labor Department to recruit people looking for work and has partnered regionally and locally with one-stop employment centers. The Bureau also said it has worked with state and local governments to ensure that temporary census workers not lose certain benefits. Schumer and three other senators wrote to Commerce Secretary Gary Locke to urge that the Census Bureau target the long-term jobless as much as it possibly could when it temporarily employs some 1.4 million people for next year's census.
I got a story here that I found in the News Gazette earlier this week. United Way and labor groups are teaming up to give out food. The United Way of Champaign County, the AFL-CIO Central Labor Council, and other labor organizations are sponsoring mobile food pantries for the next three Saturdays in Rantoul, Mahomet, Champaign, and Urbana. The organizations buy a truckload of food from the Eastern Illinois Food Bank for each distribution, which can feed anywhere from 125 to 250 families. The truckloads cost $1,500 to $2,500 and carry 5,000 to 9,000 pounds of food and household supplies, depending on their size, said the Food Bank Executive Director James Hires. It's a quick way to get a food distribution out at a very critical time, Hires said. We hope to do 30 to 40 of these a year in our 14-county area, in underserved areas where there are food gaps. These make up a big difference in a big, big way. And here's the schedule for the free food distributions going on today in Rantoul at the Community Service Center of Northern Champaign County. That's at 520 East Wabash Avenue, and that's going on right now from 10 a.m. to noon, and that's sponsored by Ask Me Local 3700, and I saw a sign up there at the Community Service Center earlier this week that said bring a box so they can load you up. Also going on today at Mahomet, United Methodist Church in Mahomet, that's 1302 East South Mahomet Road, and that's from 1 to 3 p.m., and that's sponsored by the AFL-CIO Central Labor Council. And in Champaign on December 12th at Stratton Elementary School, 902 North Randolph Street, that's from 10 a.m. to noon, that's sponsored by ECI Building and Construction Trades. And in Urbana, on December 19th at Prairie Elementary School, 2102 East Washington Street, 10 a.m. to noon, and that's sponsored by UA Local 149 and IBEW Local 601.
Okay, thank you, Bob. Of course, a lot of us need the services of those food pantries, especially the holidays, these rough economic times. Anyway, I got a story here from Buffalo, New York. Greg Horosky and his wife Diane were on the verge of being tossed out of their ranch home in Buffalo, New York, and they owed $525,000 in mortgage payments. They had no equity in the house, and their California bank threatened foreclosure. Then Suffolk County Judge Jeffrey Spinner gave them a Thanksgiving gift they'll remember all their lives. He erased their debt and slammed their bank, One West, for its harsh, repugnant, shocking, and repulsive behavior, according to the New York Post. Now, Horosky and her husband are owed practically nothing on their home, and One West, which accepted a whopping $814 million in federal bailout money, was scolded by the judge. The quote, according to the judge, the quote, the bank was so intransigent, or actually the bank was so intransigent that he, the judge, decided to punish him. And Hirosky, 55, told the Post about Spinner's ruling last week. I think the judge felt it was almost a personal vendetta. Dealing with the bank was like dealing with organized crime.
On Wednesday, the United Nations forecasted that the world economy will bounce back in 2010 with a global growth rate of 2.4%, but it warned that that recovery will be fragile. In a preview of its annual economic forecast, which will be released next month, the UN credited the massive fiscal stimulus measures by governments worldwide since late 2008 for the expected rebound. It recommended that some of those stimulus measures continued, at least until there are clearer signals of a more robust recovery in terms of increasing consumption, more private investment, and rising employment rates around the world. Assistant Secretary General Jomo Sundaram told a news conference launching the report that while there have been some important signs of recovery, there are also very grave concerns about the possibility that this recovery will be short-lived and will not be sustained. Sundaram said the UN believes the government should ignore concerns about growing fiscal deficits and possible inflation and continue the stimulus efforts until economic recovery is assured.
Okay, two years of steep job cuts all but ended last month, unexpectedly pulling down the unemployment rate and raising hopes for a lasting economic recovery. Federal figures released Friday showed that the unemployment rate fell from 10.2% in October to 10% as employers shed the fewest number of jobs since the recession began 2 years ago. The government also said far fewer jobs were lost in September and October than first reported. And the so-called underemployment rate, counting part-time workers who want full-time jobs and laid-off workers who had given up their job hunt, also fell from 17.5% in October to 17.2%. The better-than-expected figures provided a rare dose of good news for the economy, but the respite may be temporary. Job creation is still so weak that more than 15 million out-of-work Americans face fierce competition for few openings. Factories, retailers, construction companies were hardest hit by the recession, all slowed the pace of layoffs in November, and so did transportation companies and those in leisure and hospitality. And job gains were produced in education, healthcare, and professional and business services.
Okay, December 4th, which was yesterday, marks the 40th anniversary of the raid on a Black Panther apartment in which Chicago police shot and killed Fred Hampton and Mark Klock while they were sleeping in their beds. Hampton was a charismatic young chairman of the Chicago Black Panther Party, and under his leadership, the party's membership and influence had increased dramatically. The Black Panther Party had instituted a popular and expanding breakfast for children program and a police accountability project. At the age of 21, Hampton was able to reach and influence gang members, welfare mothers, as well as college and law students. Under his tutelage, the Black Panthers formed a coalition with Puerto Rican and white activists. Hampton headed the Panther Chicago branch, and Mark Klock headed the Peoria, Illinois branch. Well, anyway, there's a new book out by Jeffrey Haas called The Assassination of Fred Hampton. It's by Lawrence Hill Books, and there's a lot of interesting things about this story. And the fact that the most alarming thing was is that actually the FBI and the Justice Department in general actually conspired with the Chicago police to murder Fred Hampton and Mark Klock, and this was all under the COINTELPRO program, which was instituted during the 60s against any kind of organizations that were on the left or anyone that was trying to change the civil rights laws that posed the Vietnam War or anything else against the ruling class. So that'd probably be an interesting read, and also some really important lessons there. Unfortunately, the people who were involved, who ordered the murders, never went to jail.
In an effort to clean up Earth's atmosphere and to conserve petroleum, Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa is promoting a plan to make Southern California the electric vehicle capital of the world. Villaraigosa's plan, timed to coincide with the coming year's new electric car models, includes upgrades to 400 already in-service electric car charging stations and the installation of at least 100 new stations. When on the highway, drivers of electric cars would be allowed to use high-occupancy vehicle and carpool lanes. They would have access to free or preferred parking, and electric car owners could get subsidies of up to $2,000 for installing a charging station at their own homes. Villaraigosa told the Los Angeles Daily News, "As we continue to see our climate change, it is critical that the Los Angeles region grasp this opportunity." The plan, requiring support from Pasadena, Burbank, Santa Monica, and Santa Ana, aims to create a network of charging stations and may signal the beginning of major benefits to Earth's ecosystems, as well as introducing a new age of vehicular transportation. And I'd also like to take a moment at this time to announce that Independent Media is celebrating 10 years. The Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center is celebrating today the 10th anniversary of the birth of Independent Media. At the Independent Media Center at 202 South Broadway in Urbana, events will be taking place most of the day. The schedule is from 2 to 5 p.m. community media workshops, from 5 to 8 p.m. panel discussions, and at 8 p.m. live music, a DJ, and food and drink. All the events are free and open to the public. It's at 202 South Broadway, the Independent Media Center.
Okay, Canadian National Railway said on Wednesday it had reached an agreement with striking locomotive engineers to end their walkout as government had prepared to step in with back-to-work legislation. Canada's largest railway said the two sides had agreed to return to the bargaining table and continue negotiations on wages, benefits, and other work rules. No timetable for a final contract deal was announced. The strike started early on Saturday in response to CN unilaterally imposing a 1.5% wage increase and raising the engineers' monthly mileage cap to 4,300 miles from 3,800. After 14 months of negotiation, failed to produce a new contract. The engineers' last contract had expired on December 31st of 2008. As part of the deal, the company agreed to roll back the imposed monthly mileage cap and the wage increase. If the two sides can't reach an agreement, the wage and benefit offers will be sent to final binding arbitration. Work rule issues can also go to binding arbitration, but only if both sides agree, the company said. And news of the tentative deal was first announced in Parliament by Labour Minister Rona Ambrose, who later credited the threat of back-to-work legislation with pressuring the company and union into a settlement.
Okay, this last news story here we have is from Greg Pallast from Air America's Ring of Fire. It's titled, "The WTO, the World Trade Organization, Still Parties Like It's 1999. On 10th anniversary, the battle in Seattle bankers scheme to reopen finance casino worldwide. Apparently, one meltdown isn't enough for the World Trade Organization. They meet today in Geneva on the 10th anniversary of the battle in Seattle, the first mass protest against globalization. In a special investigation for Air America's Ring of Fire, I recently gained access to several documents from inside the file cabinets of the WTO, the World Trade Organization, the World Bank, and the Centers of Globalization. According to one marked, quote, ensure this text is not made public available. The big banks, via official trade negotiations, are secretly demanding that emerging nations, starting with Brazil, open their markets to trading in derivatives, credit default swaps, and other exotic and toxic financial products. It's not enough that they have brought the U.S. and Europe to their financial knees. Now banks, under the guise of the WTO's free trade treaty, want to expand the casino to the new big emerging powers with their trillion greenback reserves. A derivatives crash in those markets could easily trigger a financial China syndrome, a second meltdown from New York to Beijing to Brasilia. But apparently the banks and the global bureaucrats at the World Trade Organization want a party like it's 1999. Okay, we're going to listen to a little workers headline news, and then we'll be back with Tom Thomas Pomus, and we're going to get right into our interview here with Marty Conless.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Center for Economic and Policy Research says that workers will lose an estimated total of $1 trillion as a result of the Great Recession. In its new report called The $1 trillion Wage Deficit, the center says that African American and Latino workers are being especially hard hit. Economist John Schmidt says unemployment in 2010 and 2011 will cost workers more in lost wages and salaries than we've lost this year. The Center for Economic and Policy Research says from the standpoint of jobs, we're not even one-third of the way through this recession. In the wake of the White House Jobs Summit, AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says there's no bottom in sight for working families struggling to keep their jobs, their health care, and their homes. Trumka is calling on political leaders to take immediate action to do everything possible to create jobs. Trumka says the Jobs Forum at the White House is important but can't substitute for real action. Trumka is pledging that the AFL-CIO will be very active in coming weeks and months to push for concrete action on jobs. The world's largest retailer has been hit with the largest class action lawsuit settlement in Massachusetts history. Walmart is agreeing to pay $40 million to nearly 87,500 current and former workers. That settlement will go to workers who were active between August 1995 and the settlement date. The settlement alleges the company required workers to skip breaks and work overtime without overtime pay. U.S. Labor Against the War is convening its third National Assembly over the weekend in Chicago. U.S. Law's Michael Eisenscher.
We have about 195 affiliated labor organizations, everything from the largest local union in the country, SEIU 1199 in New York with 250,000 members, to national unions like CWA, probably 25 labor councils, half a dozen state labor federations.
U.S. Labor Against the War will adopt a formal policy on the Afghan war at its assembly this weekend in Chicago. It's already on record opposing an escalation of the war. Teamsters in Philadelphia went on strike Thursday to protest standards at Red Cross facilities. Jesse Russell reports.
Just weeks after a transit strike that brought the city of brotherly love to a standstill, Philadelphia is bearing witness to a new strike. Thursday morning, Red Cross workers, represented by the Teamsters, walked off the job to protest unfair labor practices and working conditions at blood service facilities. The strike comes in response to a report by Jobs with Justice that highlighted situations that could endanger donors and employees alike. According to the report, cutbacks in pay has led to high turnover rates that have resulted in less experienced workers handling patients. Workers are also allegedly expected to work longer hours that can lead to fatigue. The Red Cross has been hit with $21 million in fines by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration due to issues of blood safety.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Okay, now we're at that portion of the program, the Labor Hour Cultural Corner with Tom Thomas, and this week's poem is Where is Karma?
Who cut the logs to build the homes that popped up on the hills and plain? Who plowed the land and planted crops and built this nation we ordain? Who's been robbed by politicians of what they made in blood and sweat? Who has died at the tax man's hand when they had nothing left to get? The dollars are not flowing now, not like they had been once before, because the well of wealth is dry. Of liquid cash, there is no more. TV tells you, spend your money in commercials that never end. But before you can spend money, you should have some money to spend. Why must poverty be the curse that's laid upon the working man? Why can the worker not enjoy the profits of his fertile land? Men and women and children, too, each took their tools in their hands and stood together side by side and built our towns on wild lands. But now there's no work for workers. We're being driven to the streets. Where is karma when you need her to bring an end to our defeats? Where is Karma was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on December 3rd, 2009 and was first recited live December 5th, 2009 on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, Community Radio for East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. I got a few public service announcements here. Labor's View TV every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. Tomorrow's show, September 11th, 9/11/2000 attacks as an excuse for President Obama. It was done by George Bush to justify the continued military occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan and the escalation of the war. So tune in tomorrow, Sunday from 4 to 5 on Urbana Public Television, Comcast Channel 6 for Labor's View TV. Also, pick up the latest edition of the Public Eye newspaper published by the Independent Media Center of Urbana-Champaign. The whole issue this month is dedicated to the 10th anniversary of the Battle of Seattle, the World Trade Organization protests. So check those out. And now what we're going to do is we have a special guest in the show, Marty Conless, and I want to play start off here with a cassette of some of the sounds of the on the streets of the WTO protest 10 years ago. Okay, Marty, thanks for coming down again to the Labor Hour, and we're gonna, basically, you're here today, not just on the Labor Hour, but you're going to be on a panel discussion later on tonight about 5 o'clock at the Independent Media Center at 202 South Broadway, downtown Urbana, the Urbana Post Office Building. So I guess 10 years ago, you went out to, decided to go out to Seattle. What was kind of, what motivated you to go out there?
Thanks, Dave. Yeah, I'll talk about it in a second, but first I just want to salute the Illinois Labor, World Labor Hour, and all their efforts, Dave and Bob and Tom and Bill, and a big shout-out to Peter Miller, who I know is listening out there, because this is a perfect expression of independent media out here. You guys have been doing a great job week after week, and I want to salute all the regular listeners also, who I think support you guys tremendously. So I hope to see everybody at the Indy Media Center here today. And, I went out to WTO. I've been a labor beat video producer for 16 years in Chicago, and we have a cable access TV show. It's been on for 22 years. We've had 590 shows so far. And you can now we're on the Internet, and you can Google Labor Beat. And we also have a Facebook page, so we're at Labor Beat there for your listeners to check it out. We have hundreds of videos up there. We cover picket line and all kinds of social justice issues, and we try to do our best as volunteer independent producers. And way back in 1999, I guess, I went out to Seattle for a labor rally, you know, and I ended up in quite an ordeal. I was a little naive. I'd never seen anything like that in my life. And
into a pretty massive rally.
Yeah, yes, indeed. In fact, yes, it was really kind of a watershed as far as being a reporter, as far as being a trade unionist, as far as being an activist kind of thing in my life anyway. And sure, we went to the soccer stadium, and I went out there with another radio guy, Jim Donahue, who was with us, and we met up with two other fellas, Ken and Mike, and the four of us made sort of a media team. We went working as a team together. And yeah, we immediately went to the soccer stadium where 30,000-40,000 trade union people there, and we heard all the rallies and speeches and all that stuff, and we started walking downtown. And you know, I was there to see labor sidetracked from going downtown to not join the protesters. And
how far was the soccer stadium from the downtown front lines, if you will?
If I, you know, 10 years is a memory thing right now. Okay. So I would say it was a mile and a half or 2 miles.
Okay, and labor intentionally picked that spot, you think, to be away from where the heart of the action was?
I mean, I want to talk as a witness, so
okay.
They could have broken through and joined those other protesters, and they did not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just like all labor fairs, they're well controlled and well dressed. So, so we broke off to go see the action, you know. And I was with the team, and I got separated from our team. And one of the first things I found, which blew my mind, was these people. With their arms in these tubes concreted together. I quickly figured out what was going on. They were taking over certain intersections around the convention center. And at the main intersection, they had, I don't know, a dozen people with their arms concreted together in these tubes. laying on the ground, each one with a coach to give them water or whatever. And I was a little naive, you know. I never seen anything like that in my life because there was a troop carrier that I thought was going to run right over them, you know.
Wow, a National Guard troop carrier?
You know, it was one of those personnel carriers. It was definitely a military vehicle. And I was mortified, and I have some terrific video of that. And I knew I was into something pretty deep at that point. And so it went on from there, and it was one of the crazier days I've ever had. And we found each other, got back together again, and we spent probably 4 days running the streets with our video cameras and our audio equipment and our reporting skills, and it was quite an event.
What was the name of the video that you released at, right after that we put together?
I think it was just WTO Seattle. It was a big seller at the time. I should put it up on the web. That's,
okay.
I think about it, but yeah. It was quite an experience. I've never seen organization on that level.
As far as from the protesters, you mean?
As far as the protesters, were well-behaved, very intelligent, well-disciplined, and there is no way that they were the problem there. We spent 4 days getting pushed down intersections by the police. There were people dressed in black with their face covered that were causing problems. And it wasn't a handful of college kids, you know. It was the police.
Agent provocateurs, you're saying.
Well, now I'm going to go into that because in my wandering around when I was, you know, by myself during that first, most of that first day there, I came across probably 15, 20 minutes later after all the glass breaking and all that stuff. And, I thought about this for a long time, and it wasn't until later that I do agree with the way of looking at it that it was agent provocateurs, because there were about 80 police in a ring around that area protecting these guys dressed in black with the black masks on. They were grown men, right? And the protesters were telling the police, go arrest those people. And I was there. I got a lot of it on film, you know. And the police just smiled and turned their backs. They allowed Fox cameras to get in there for those moments. So in that way, this is what people remember the most, as it was put out on the Fox and the major media. That same scene over and over again where Starbucks windows busted in and the coffee's flying all over. I was there pretty, but it wasn't there in the beginning. It was almost dawn, or it was something. I wasn't there, but there was something funny going on there. You know what I mean? Because and they have co-opted that, and still today, I hear about the riots in Seattle. It was a police riot. It was not the demonstrators that were rioting. You know, so that's my statement out there for. Everybody, and I'll live with that.
Okay. Well, you know what? I remember seeing, of course, the internet was relatively new at this time, right before Seattle. I just got my first personal computer in that summer of 1999. And I remember, you know, a month or two before the protests out there, I was seeing all sorts of emails from individuals, from various organizations about going out there. And it was just one after another. And I'm thinking, wow. You know, I think this is going to turn into something big here. I'm not, you know, I don't know for sure, but boy, just from the volume of emails. And what I was really impressed with was that, I think it was the very first day, when the protesters, about a couple hundred, went to try to shut down the conference center and the police around them. And the next thing, there was thousands of protesters surround the police. And so they actually blocked the police in, and they weren't able to, instead of just shutting down the entrance to that conference center, that they actually shut down a whole massive, I don't know, 4 or 5 square block area. Did you happen to see that? Or?
Sure, yeah. Sure. I've seen all kinds of things. I've seen, you know, the term democracy in the streets and all. You really got to see it to believe it. You know, where affinity groups would stop and collect and make decisions what we're going to do next. And, you know, we weren't there for those reasons. We were there as sort of befuddled, you know.
Labor journalists.
Labor journalists, yeah, you know.
Sure.
And the leadership that I saw from 19, 20-year-old women, things like that, college students were just, it was just amazing to me. I don't want to sound off mark, but at the time, this was a new thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was an incredible experience in that way. And I have footage from the jail solidarity on Thursday, which I think a lot of people would be interested in. If anybody was there and remembered that day, they had 700 people in the county jail, and they had probably 2,000 people out on the street, and we were waiting them out. We were going to siege the jail until they let our people go, you know?
Wow, you hear about these stories going back, you know, 100 years or more back in the labor struggles, right. Or even some of the civil rights struggles, you know, and that's pretty incredible. I wasn't aware of that.
And so this is very big for me. That I've never seen it because, you know, Dave, I know you've been in a lot of union meetings and or whatever, these meetings where you try to get a resolution passed, right? And it
uh-huh.
takes 3 months, and it takes, discussion on whatever, you know? And, well, these 2,000, again, my memory is like what it is, but I'd say 1,500 people, they, through one itsy-bitsy Radio Shack microphone, they proceeded to pass 13 resolutions. All agreed on in a form of consensus that it was absolutely amazing to me. They would it was call and repeat. They'd stand in the flower box there with their little microphone, call and repeat, and then nobody would speak for more than a minute or two. They'd hand the bullhorn off to the next person. So, you know, there was no leadership to arrest,
mm-hmm.
right? There was
okay.
nobody to say that was the person. There was.
Uh-huh.
20 people who were involved in getting this consensus together. And the first thing they said was, "Who has a pencil?" And then, you know, people would raise their hand and say, "Okay, you're the secretary." Okay? And then they'd say, "Everybody around that person with a pencil, hold hands." So, we were in a group, you know, we were kind of crusty construction workers, but we had students, we had a teacher, we had a nurse, we had a American Indian fellow, you know, we're all holding hands. This is all kind of really weird, you know.
You better sing Kumbala or something.
Right, you know. Yeah, you know, it was all kind of difficult for us at the time. But
yeah.
we all kind of knew something magical was in the air, something very interesting. So there was all these circles out in the plaza there, you know. And we immediately took a fancy to our secretary. Her name was Fran. And we were going to tell Fran what we wanted, right? So she wrote them all down, and then through this process, they called all the secretaries up, and then they went through the process of eliminating the repeats, and they came up with like 33 things that this group wanted done from the sheriff and our prisoners. And so they winnered it down to then they had the big circle with the secretaries, and then we could only talk to Fran by note, so our group was in the back, so we immediately became friends, you know, run a note up to Fran, you know, and everything was done with call and repeat. So,
and what do you mean by call and repeat?
Well, they would say a phrase and they would repeat it, you know. So like when we were on the outer edge of this 2,000 crowd, even though it sounds like a slow, ponderous process, we could have conversations and things like that, but your ear would be attuned to what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd never be out of it, you know what I mean? There
okay.
wasn't no secret meeting going on here.
Uh-huh.
There was enough people that knew how the decision process was going, you know, and so they were eliminated. Like they had one idea: let's walk over and take over the interstate highway, you know, that's right over our heads, you know. Well, it was emotionally that was what people wanted to do, but you know, in the rational process, that was not the right thing to do. So these things got eliminated out of the 33, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so we ended up with, like, I remember 12 or 13 demands. And so it was an exciting night. It probably took three hours, or as I remember, 4 hours. But I'm thinking to myself, I've been in union meetings that's taken forever to push any sort of resolution through, and here's 2,000 people decided on 13 things in 3 hours through this consensus process. And it's really challenged my ideas on how groups work together,
mm-hmm.
how they come to decisions, you know? Because, no, we didn't mark a paper ballot and put it in a box and all this other kind of corruptible kind of way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody had their chance to say, and everybody had their participation, and it went forward like that.
Okay.
So it was really a really great night.
Oh wow, this is just pretty amazing. And you know, this we had 18 local people go out to WTO in Seattle. And in fact, when I was vice president of the Central Labor Council here, the AFL-CIO Champaign County, we actually voted, the delegates voted to give $600 to help for the travel expenses for three activists. And then there was like four other individual unions after that that came up with some money to help finance the 18 people that went out there. Two of our people were arrested, and they were arrested when they walked around a corner, and they were arrested for being improperly dressed in turtle suits. I mean, did you see a lot of that, just mass arrests for, you know, no reason, basically just the police wanted just to grab people, if you will, just to get them off the streets?
Yeah, I saw a lot of police of abuse, and probably along those lines, though, we were staying at a friend's house out there, and we were getting ready to go out on Wednesday morning, so at 7 or 8 o'clock, you know, and they had the news, the local news on. And my friend's wife, who was there, was crying inconsolably, and we went in a room and found out that the turtle people had taken over an intersection.
Okay.
And it was live on television, you know. They had cardboard things, wares that they wore as turtles. And what was happening was the police bus was there arresting them one at a time, and as they put them on the bus, they'd actually rip the backing off the people and throw them in a pile, just like what they're doing with the real turtles.
Oh.
You know?
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And they were putting them on the bus, and that was the news report. And she was everybody was, like, emotionally wound up, but that really sent her over the edge to see her neighbor, you know, these turtle backs and these cardboard turtle backs in a pile, you know, representative of the real turtle backs. So,
mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I've seen a lot of police brutality there, and mm-hmm. and I noticed, like, the independent cameras, like myself and I am other people, camcorder was sort of new at the time, you know, they were on the protest, but the Fox cameras, the network cameras were all behind the police.
Mm-hmm.
So the impression that is always giving is that the protesters were acting irrationally when they were getting prodded and gassed. So, you know, you got to have a discerning mind when you're watching video.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite a very good point. You know, and in fact, that was a big reason why the whole Indie Media Network started. Now, did you know about this endeavor out when you were out there? Basically, all these people running around getting footage like yourself, except running to various storefronts or apartments or whatever and uploading it to the internet. I mean, I take it it was probably, you probably, did you or not? I mean, did you know this was going on or at the time?
Well, Labor Beat, whom I'm affiliated with, I want to bring this up today. I got a couple histories of the IMC, but there's Labor Beat's been around for a long time. And if we go back to 1996, which was the Democratic Convention in Chicago, there was an organization called Counter Media.
Mm-hmm.
And in their process of covering the Democratic Convention, they used our offices as their central base in Teamster City there in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first time I ever saw a collective news kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, like I said earlier, I was a bit naive and a little more young, and they did rub me the wrong way the way they came on. But that was just me. But I was there the night that they downloaded, I think it was like the first picture of all time, I don't know, from the satellite, but like I remember being around a computer console as like line by line this picture of a cop, you know, hitting a protester, you know, came on as like proof, video or photographic proof that, mm-hmm. you know, police brutality existed at the Democratic National Convention. You know, I remember the dial up and everything was so slow. And a big whoop and a holler. And later on, the video they provided through Counter Media's efforts did release a lot of the protesters from police arrest that happened there. So,
okay.
So yeah, I was aware of Indie Media. I checked in when I was out there and everything too.
Okay, all right. Yeah, you know, and that's the thing is one of the, of course, and I wasn't aware of this Counter Media project, you know, 3-4 years prior.
Right.
But the main reason for this was that again and again, the corporate media was distorting what was really going on, this was the need for having a different media, because obviously the corporate media was always never showing police brutality, always showing basically pushing the ruling class line, and that basically the Indian media was wanting to be more of a show the truth and be more of a people's media and everything. But anyway, I'll tell you what. I want to play a song from this CD that was given to me by Peter Miller shortly after one of the founders of the Labor Hour back in 1996, along with Bill Gorell. He gave this to me shortly after he got back from Seattle, and it's the name of the performers is Larry Shaw and the Kings of Slow, and the song I want to play is called Soul Down the River, which I think pretty much sums up why all these different individuals and groups and organizations went out to Seattle to protest against the World Trade Organization, because NAFTA had just been passed 5 years earlier, and the devastating effects of it's corporate trade, and their treaties, these corporate trade treaties, those are infringing upon the sovereignty of countries, of local government, and the will of the people was becoming more and more clear. And of course, I think within labor, this is particularly so. The whole concept of sold down the river. So I just want to play this, then we're going to come back with some more here from Marty Conless.
The president signed a GATT treaty into law. Fast acted Congress with only hours of debate. We ceded our authority in the blink of an eye to a group of corporations that have purchased the right. They call it free trade, I'll tell you what that means. You can have your unions here, but the factories overseas putting poisons in the water and pay pennies. We're being sold down the river. The WTO sold down the river. Sold down the river. Sold down the river. The WTO meeting in Seattle to plan the next century. And we need to be there in the streets when the size of corporations exceeds the finances of nations. Democratic process cannot compete. They call it free trade, I'll tell you what that means. Your health and safety laws, democratically made, can be challenged from abroad. As barriers to foreign trade, we're being sold down the river. WTO, soul down the river, soul down the river.
Okay, again, that was Sold Down the River by Larry Shaw and the Kings of Slow. Evidently, this was recorded before the WTO protests out there. It was almost like a sort of a rally anthem, if you will, to get people to go out there and everything. But anyway, Marty, tell me, what's changed in the last 10 years, do you think, since the infamous Battle of Seattle?
Right. I recently at on the street at an anti-war protest following Obama's 30,000 more with the help for speech. And,
out in West Point?
Yeah, well, this was in Pittsburgh, actually.
Oh, Pittsburgh,
but
okay.
They had a young SDS student there, 21 years old, and he pointed out the fact that those cadets that painfully listened to Obama's speech were probably 10 years old at the time of 9/11. And if you think about their formative adolescent years, have known nothing but war, war.
Mm-hmm.
And and it got me to thinking about this WTO thing. When we went out there in 1999, it was a high 8 camera. The batteries were suspect. I had to plug it in everywhere I went to keep the batteries going.
Mm-hmm.
We had a cassette recorder with big D batteries. I mean, on Wednesday of that trip, I remember Pickaxe Productions produced 200 copies of the events of Monday, 2 days before. And I was really excited about the fact and I could get this VCR tape for $5. I thought this was a very historic tape, and actually it was a real good tape.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an example of what Labor Beat tries to do as far as producing things very quickly and timely and get them out there. And so I look back, and that was really inspiring to me to know that this media could be produced so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, camcorders, you got to remember, were kind of new. Now everybody's got one on their phone. You know, I mean, so if you're 21 years old today, you think DVDs and you know, YouTube existed, you know what I mean? You know, forever. In 10 years, it's gone so quickly from analog to digital, and now we're in digital, and it's exponentially taken off from there. So from 10 years from now, they're talking about, who knows, you know, I saw a thing about, you know, what do you call that? Transhumanism, where the person becomes the computer type of things. I've seen all
chip in the brain.
Yeah. You know, I mean, 10 years from now, this is a really reasonable. Because if I was 10 years ago in Seattle, 1999, thought that I could do a video and get it up on the internet in 2 days, I would have said, no way.
Uh huh.
Right?
Yes.
It just wasn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's pretty common.
At that time, it was pretty technologically difficult.
Right, like I was talking about the screen, you know. So, yeah, so these are the differences in 10 years makes, and indie media could take off tremendously if people have the desire to tell what they consider the truth and not sit passively and accept what is fed into their brains by corporate TV.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, and you know, it's interesting. The whole YouTube thing is really, you know, that is one aspect of that. That I mean, gosh, I mean, now if something happens that the corporate media is going to try to ignore and stuff, it can be within, like you said, minutes posted on the internet on YouTube. And of course, we also see though where there's corporate interests and wanting to try to get more control over the internet. You think there's any correlation there, or you think it's purely financial reasons? A little speculative question.
Yeah. That's power. We can study power all day long, I suppose, you know. But mm-hmm. we as indie media people, radio people, and mm-hmm. the conference today, I hope to see a lot of people out at the conference today. I think the indie media here in Urbana and everywhere, and radio shows like this need a lot more support. And tell those people that are doing it that they're doing a good job, because they're mostly volunteers. And tell your organizations to support these people with a decent book.
And not just support financially, but participate, because that's something that we are always trying to encourage here in the Labor Hours, not just to get guests on the air, but to, you know, you got something you want us to cover, come on the show, you know. And heck, I mean, you know, we could, you know, make room for about any type of, you know, little project or information you want to get out there. I mean, if you want to come in even on a regular basis, we'd be willing to do that. And I think that's what's great about people's media as opposed to corporate media, which is all about exclusion instead of inclusion.
Right. It's active-passive argument, too. I mean, mm-hmm. You really do have to get off your duff to change this world. Sitting Cheetos watching TV is not going to do it, you know, or turning on your car radio. I find the car radio to be very invasive in my life. I don't hardly even listen to it anymore. The commercials are most irritating, and it gets you. I know why there's road rage, because you got your car radio going. You know what I mean? It adds to your turmoil in your brain, and that's how they got us. They got us because they got our brains. You know?
Okay. Especially when you got hate radio like Rush Limbaugh or whoever screaming and yelling and all this hate, and I can just see how that could contribute to road rage.
I see the car radio is a very insidious device, because you're right. It is. You are trapped. You are a trapped audience,
mm-hmm.
and your only choice is to turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people turn the car radio right on first thing they do. You know?
Yes.
I mean, I think anyway.
You know, I've noticed a big struggle, talking to a lot of working class people, It seems like I'd probably say the vast majority of working class people out there are just in such a habit of getting their news information from just sitting down in their living room and turning on their television, turning on CNN, turning on Fox, turning on ABC, CBS, NBC, to try to encourage them to say, look, they acknowledge that most of the stuff's lies, but even if somebody that realizes it's lies, if they don't have alternative information to counter this, it's still going to affect their decision making process.
Yeah. One thing that the crackdown of indie media journalists is going on quite a bit across the country and across that case where they subpoenaed the students of Northwestern and the Innocence Project and getting those people off of death row. I mean, that's an extension of a lot of media cases. Out there that if nothing else, it's intimidation and it's threatening. You don't need a state license to be a journalist. You don't need a degree to be a journalist. Anybody can do it. Anybody can type, can do it. Anybody can run a camera, can do it. There's not a whole lot of technical skills anymore. Back 10 years ago or 20 years ago, there was a lot of work. TV was magic. You turned it on. Wow, how did they do that? We don't need that anymore. It's all in the grasp of anybody who desires to have a story to tell it.
Yes, I mean that is one of the phenomena, and I see what you're saying about that. As this is spread, obviously it's becoming a threat with the, like you just gave the example of Northwestern and stuff. And we're just about running out of time here. I just want to let everybody know that Marty's going to be over at the Independent Media Center on a panel discussion starting at 5 p.m. Today. It's over at the Urbana Post, downtown Urbana Post Office Building, 202 South Broadway, right next to Lincoln Square. I encourage you to come out and listen. There's going to be some other people on the panel, including Danielle Chenoweth, who was out there as well. Tom, did any more information I left out on that? Or?
Yeah, at 8 p.m., we're going to have live music, a DJ, free food and drink.
Well, great. I forgot about the fun part there, besides Marty's information. So, definitely tune out for that. And you've been listening to the Illinois World Labor Hour on WFT 90.1 FM, broadcast live worldwide at www.wft.org. And just a final pitch here. Please support all your alternative and community radio. I guarantee you, if this was a corporate station, there is no way that the Illinois World Labor Hour would be a program, or with Marty Collins or any of these other great guests we've had over time.
We'd be allowed in the building.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. So,
thanks for having me, Dave.
You bet. And we're going to leave you with a little bit more of another song by the Larry Shaw and Kings of Slow here. This one's called Dig Roads. And until next week, be safe and be active.
Came by your shed without making a sound. Borrowed your saw and brought it back around. You can keep all the things you've hid. Wouldn't want to frighten you or your kid. Wouldn't touch the dust on your antique bridge. Just needed to borrow your saw. You don't pay for the place you sleep, or pay for footsteps to your horse and weed. It's a crime that can take you in, lock you up in an 8-foot bin. Folks standing round will be paying in. Not one would think to lift a hand. Just needed to borrow your saw, friend. Needed to borrow your saw. Splinters and rust before you use it again. Just needed to borrow your saw. There's a law, you gotta stay in one place. One puts a price on the length of your days. You can have your rent and your 8-15 to buy your own breath back and cash it in. The air's still free, but all the land I've ever seen, it's land that someone owns.